The day somebody McSomebody put a gun to my breast and called me a cat and threatened to shoot me was the same day the milkman died.
I'm here today with Claire Hobber, who's a local teacher and writer, and she suggested that we talk about a book which has had quite a bit of publicity for reasons we'll come to. It's called Milkman.
The author is Anna Burns. She's writing as an 18-year-old young woman in this book, but in fact, she herself is in middle age and has had a life where she's been learning her trade and her craft, and it all really comes to play in the amazing prose and story of this novel and the way it's delivered. Her own story actually has been a little bit of a fairy tale in the end, although she's been through very hard times. She's been living on people's sofas. She's been eating from a food bank. But in 2018, Anna Burns won the Man Booker Prize with Milkman. So her persistence and her integrity has been rewarded, not something that always happens.
The book tells us where it comes from, which is also where she came from, isn't it? I mean, she was herself from Northern Ireland, from Belfast.
Indeed, although that's one of the interesting and contentious parts of the novel, that the place is never mentioned. Those of us who watched all the footage in the 1970s and 80s during the Trouble on the television will recognise the scenes and the issues of Belfast. But I understand that younger people who are reading this novel now, to whom all that is foreign, are assuming that it's a dystopian novel rather in the way that The Handmaid's Tale is. And they can see that this is some sort of society that has been warped by circumstances. So she's telling it very much on two levels. She does pin it down. She has references to the 1970s, like Sigourney Weaver and Freddie Mercury and Kate Bush, and mentions of the Cold War. So if you're looking for the references, they are there. But it also has a resonance way beyond that. It's almost like a study of how people will behave when put under these strange circumstances of the Troubles.
Perhaps we can come to some of the strange circumstances that arise within that dystopian context, or the stressful context, call it what you will, because what frightens the life out of me at the moment, and I'm thinking of where we are now at the moment, talking of, well, does it matter whether Ireland is thrown back into the Troubles again? Well, this book is a very timely reminder, actually. Whether or not the book is about Ireland doesn't matter, because it gives us a picture of what some of us remember of those days. In the opening section, we have a very strange starting the day. Somebody McSomebody. It's a very odd sort of phrase. Now, what is she on about?
Well, this is one of the symptoms of living in a tightly knit community which is almost turned in on itself.
The day somebody McSomebody put a gun to my breast and called me a cat and threatened to shoot me was the same day the milkman died. He had been shot by one of the state hit squads, and I did not care about the shooting of this man. Others did care, though. And some were those who, in the parlance, knew me to see but not to speak to. And I was being talked about because there was a rumour started by them, or more likely by first brother-in-law, that I had been having an affair with this milkman, and that I was 18 and he was 41. I knew his age not because he got shot and it was given by the media, but because there had been talk before this, for months before the shooting, by these people of the rumour, that 41 and 18 was disgusting. The 23 years difference was disgusting. That he was married and not to be fooled by me, for there were plenty of quiet, unnoticeable people who took a bit of watching. It had been my fault too, it seemed, this affair with the milkman. But I had not been having an affair with the milkman. I did not like the milkman, and had been frightened and confused by his pursuing and attempting an affair with me.
There are no names within this book. People are known only by their role within the society or by their nickname. So even our protagonist, we never learn her name, not even her Christian name. She is known throughout the book as Middle Sister. And Somebody McSomebody is a wannabe Republican paramilitary who actually is all mouth. And many of the characters in the book are known by their relationship to Middle Sister. So she goes running with third brother-in-law and she has various other relatives. And also people are sometimes known by the odd things that they do. So there is Nuclear Boy, who spends all his life in terrible fear of nuclear war breaking out as a consequence of the Cold War and is obsessed by that. And there is Tablets Girl, who again, it's interesting that she is even at large because she's a mentally disturbed young woman who is a poisoner. So she slips things into people's drinks. For all it's a condemning and a harsh society, they also somehow seem to manage to sustain people who perhaps in another society would have been put away.
Yes, and the names, as you said, they're either characteristics of the person or something, the role. And we're told in the very beginning it was the same day the milkman died.
That's his name, and without any real reason, seemingly, that seems to be what he's come to be called. So there is also a real milkman in the book who actually delivers milk, but this guy, his role is as powerful paramilitary chieftain, presumably the IRA, and basically he is a big man in that town and he can do what he wants and he can get who he wants, and if you cross him you're likely to suffer a shooting or a car bomb. And he takes a fancy to our protagonist without her ever wittingly doing anything to attract him. She's a girl in her late teens. We glean that she's got long blonde hair. Perhaps that was enough to do it for him. And he kind of appears in her life out of nowhere and will not take no for an answer. He grooms her. He takes it for granted that one day she will be his. And she is flabbergasted and doesn't know what to do. And worst of all, because he appears regularly now in her company, what he's doing is trying to mesmerise her and groom her and persuade her into a relationship. But people seeing them together presume that the relationship has already started. Again, how relevant this novel is in a time of Brexit. It's also relevant in the year of Me Too, because this is a girl who is suffering under the power of a man. And one phrase that she uses, she says, "Because I was confused and becoming enfeebled, shut down by the tactics of this milkman." And she expresses the powerlessness, particularly before the Me Too movement, of a young girl being groomed by an older man.
And that is the reality of the power structure. And so this sort of community, they're very important women in there.
Women always broke the curfews. That would be the traditional women, because until recently, there hadn't been any newfangled branch of sisterhood women. This breaking of the curfews, too, would be because the traditional women's patience would have been stretched far enough. It would have been overtried, overtested, and the subsequent snapping of it would be directed towards any group of men, any religion, any side of the water, setting up rules and regulations, overreaching themselves with their rules and regulations, expecting everyone else too, meaning women, to go along with the preposterousness of the silliness they had concocted as rationale in their heads.
They're powerful in their own right because they are the head of household, or they're working well, they're keeping things safe that would not otherwise be safe, but they're having to watch their backs all the time. And she has problems because she does things that are not quite normal.
Again, as we mentioned with Tablet Girl, you can be beyond the bounds of what people consider normal, but strangely, she is still tolerated. Now, it's really interesting what puts her beyond the pale. That's the phrase they use, meaning beyond the boundaries. And the thing that she does when she's walking is something that the author, in fact, herself admitted to doing. She reads while walking, and people mention to her that this is not normal. And her best friend, known simply in the book as Friend, takes her to task, says she's put herself beyond the pale.
"Often I would walk along reading books. I didn't see anything wrong with this, but it became something else to be added as further proof against me. Reading while walking was definitely on the list."
It's dangerous behaviour because it means she's not alert to what's going on around her. So in a situation where there is warfare waged at a low level the whole time, including shootings, including bombings, you don't want to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You don't want to become collateral damage or walk in on a situation. So this reading by walking is actually dangerous in a way that we today in the UK possibly don't even imagine. But it just is also unusual. It draws attention to her. People look at her and think she's a bit odd. And it's really interesting as well what she's reading. She's reading 19th century novels, and she does explain that she finds it very difficult to live in the time, in the place that she's been placed in. It's escapist behaviour. So it's no wonder then that she's not reading 20th century novels. She's reading Victorian splendid works of literature like the Brontes and taking herself to a different place and a different time.
And as for vigilance or non-vigilance, for switching off or not switching off, it was my opinion that with my reading while walking, I was doing both at the same time. And why should I not? I knew that by reading while I walked, I was losing touch in a crucial sense with communal up-to-dateness, and that that indeed was risky.
Reading 19th century novels while walking along through the streets of a city that may or may not be Belfast, it feels awfully like it. At a very difficult time, and we would call it the Troubles. And you do that not only if you, it's dangerous to do that because of the reasons you said, you're not observing what's going on around you, and you need to be very observant in that sort of situation, but also because it makes you feel different. And people don't like people who are different because they're a threat. And ironically, she is the least threatening person. She has a boyfriend. She calls him maybe boyfriend.
Indeed.
Because again, that's his role. Is he or isn't he, as it were? There's that question mark, isn't there? But she would be very happy with him, but he's a bit of a risk as well.
That's right, exactly. And it's absolutely farcical the way he comes to notice. And it is that they're taking to bits a car, and part of the car has the badge, which is a British manufacturer. And he is actually a car mechanic who stores and reuses parts of cars. And the bit with the badge on it falls to him. And that can be seen as a sign that he supports the English. So unwittingly, he puts himself at risk in that way. And he also, in a way that he doesn't actually realise, is at risk because the milkman begins to make threats that he'll leave a car bomb under his car or otherwise deal with maybe boyfriend so that he will get out of middle sister's way and leave her to the milkman. So a young man who doesn't even realise he's in danger there.
But she's also very bright. She's clearly got a high IQ, high understanding, but she's not getting opportunity to explore that.
No, she wanted to go to Greek and Roman class, I think, or Greek and Roman culture. That's what she wanted to do. But in a common trope in this book, she denies herself the things she really wants to do and goes to French classes to try and develop herself. There's an interesting instance in the French class of the small-mindedness of the people in that community. The teacher is trying to get them to describe the sunset, which is happening before their very eyes outside the classroom window, and is asking them what colour the sky is. And they are not looking. They are feeding back to her the knowledge that they know to be true. The sky is blue. They're very disturbed by the fact that she's trying to get them to see other colours in the sky. They will allow that at night the sky is black, that sometimes there is white in the sky, which is clouds, but otherwise the sky is blue.
"Tell me, class," she said. "What colours? Do you hear that? Colours, plural, do you see now?" We looked because she made us, even though sunsets weren't part of our curriculum. But we looked, and it seemed to us that the sky, as usual, was turning from light blue to dark blue, which meant it was just blue. I knew, though, since that recent alarming and alerting sunset I'd experienced with maybe boyfriend, that that sky that night in the French class was neither those shades of blue. A person of any level of contrariness or entrenchment might have been pushed to find any blue in the whole of our class's window. We were pushed. Also, we were adamant. "Blue? Blue?" Perhaps a bit, "No, blue," came our all-out replies.
So it's a really powerful illustration of how even somebody who's trying to educate and expand horizons finds it very difficult in this inward-looking, threatened community. It's not just that they are not outward-looking. I think that is also coerced by the threat of violence. And also, when you look outside, who is the power to whom you might appeal? We are looking at the Roman Catholic community here. Not that it ever says it. It calls them the state renouncers. So that's Roman Catholic Republican to you and I guess. And they actually can't access the power structures that should help an ordinary citizen. So to the extent that when somebody is really ill, they still don't visit the hospital because that is a state institution. So it's not for the likes of them. That's for the Protestants. But
there's also a sense in which they don't go to hospital because it's part of the state, but also because if they step inside that, they then might have done something or said something or become something. They might have stepped over into the state side.
Yep.
Therefore, they become a threat to the people who control their own community.
So they're wary of looking like traitors.
That's right.
Go.
So if you're not with us, you're against us. She describes walking through certain areas, and the landscape is quite important, isn't it? We know that it's going to be fairly rough, fairly bombed out, fairly dark. Mm. There's various sections where she describes the landscape. Do you think the landscape comes through very well?
I think it's very analogous to the way that people are named by their roles or by their relationships. The landscape is named by the things that happen there. And it even reminds me of the Australian Aborigines describe their landscape in terms of stories and things that happened rather than a two-dimensional map. So you have places like the 10-minute area, because it's a place that you just want to get through, and that takes about 10 minutes.
The 10-minute area was, and always had been, some bleak, eerie, Mary Celeste little place. It was shaped in a round, dominated by three giant churches spaced closely and evenly about its centre. These churches had long been out of action, disused, defeated, almost shells of buildings, though their black spires still towered up there in the sky. As a child, I used to imagine those towers trying to touch tips, to converge, to make a witch's hat which everybody would then be forced to walk through. That had been the first noticeable thing for me all those years ago about this little place. Apart from the witch's hat, there were few other buildings, and what there were also seemed deserted. Supposed offices, a few residences, with nobody appearing to live in them or to work in them, and people, should you happen to come across any like you, would have their heads down as they too went hurrying by.
And there's the usual place, which is the graveyard, isn't it? Which I think is probably the usual place that people either are shot or where the body is found or where people are summoned to when they're in trouble. It's never fully explained why it's the usual place, but you can imagine. They almost don't need outside reference and addresses because everybody they know is within this community and knows the same history and knows the same thoughts.
Possibly somebody listening to us talk about this. I mean, we've had the benefit of having read it and having listened to the audio version, or some of it anyway. And it could be that we give the impression it's quite complicated. Actually, it's complex in the sense it's got lots of references and lots of things to think about.
Mm.
But I think you said to me that you've gone back to it and looked at it again. You realise how good it is.
I'm really very grateful to have been able to do this because it meant that I looked in more detail and I'm just completely convinced. I think one of the massive gifts of the book is the voice of the protagonist of Middle Sister. And as you can hear in the extracts, Northern Irish, an accent that you hear in your ears as you're reading the book. But very much it's the concerns and the voice of this 18-year-old girl, but an 18-year-old girl who's an autodidact. She's educated herself with her 19th century novels that she reads while walking. So she's got an extraordinary vocabulary, but totally accounted for. We know exactly where she got that vocabulary from. And she tells most of the story in an indignant tone. The whole story is her protesting against what's happening to her with the milkman. And it is just like listening to somebody telling you their story. It's not hard to read or hard to understand. It flows beautifully.
And I think that's one of its great successes, that it is so enjoyable to listen to. Mm. And I think I've heard more of the audio version than you have. Mm. And it really just flows. And you think, gosh, I don't want to put this down. I don't want to stop it. And I think that's great. And obviously the judges of the Man Booker felt it was pretty successful as well.
Mm.
So Claire and I have been talking about Milkman by Anna Burns, which was awarded the Man Booker Prize 2018. An earlier work of hers, No Bones, I think was her first novel, was shortlisted for the Orange Prize. She's had a few other awards as well. Great writer, great piece of listening as well as reading. Thank you very much, Claire.
Thank you, Rob.
Milkman was read by Breeze Brennan, and the audiobook lasts for just over 14 hours, but well worth every minute. Our thanks to Calibre Audio for allowing us to use those extracts.